Hey, my name is Eli Banta. Welcome to my physics lab at Great Lakes Christian High School in Beamsville, Ontario, on the southern shore of Lake Ontario.
Welcome to Another Day in God's Story. This is the Every Square Centimeter podcast, a project of Christian Schools Canada, and we are psyched to have you join us as we tour this beautiful country we call Canada, celebrating and finding inspiration in the people, places, and practices in and around Christian education. In our last episode of season three, yeah, that's right, we're moving into season four. We went international and spent time in Tasmania with Paul Matthews, and we learned a bunch of things. We learned that sometimes it's necessary to kill a bass to catch a muskie. We learned that we had a beast off. And we learned which Canadian or Australian beast would win in a battle of the beasts in a school gymnasium. Okay, that alone should get you to go back and listen to that episode. We learned how AI will be able to help teachers design individualized, differentiated lessons. We learned that Christians need to be involved in AI spaces as a place of creativity. We learned that burrowing your head in the sand like an echidna will be ineffective because technology makes ecological changes rather than additive changes. And we learn that students will take a huge haircut if we don't prepare students to use AI well. If you're thinking, I don't know what that means, you need to go back and listen. It was wonderful visiting with Paul. So go and listen. But today, we're grateful that you've joined us in Beamsville, Ontario. And we're going to refer to ourselves today as a run. So Eli, I'm going to take a stab at this. A Beamsvillian run. Is that right? Beamsvillian?
If you are not a good person, you are Beamsvillian. If you are a nice person, you are a sunbeam. Right? So you're a sunbeam from Beamsville or a Beamsvillian.
Okay, very nice, okay. Very nice. Okay, I was thinking so, Beamer myself.
That's what we drive.
Those are the uppities.
Okay, so to get to know our sunbeam run... Is that right, Eli? A sunbeam run? We're going to start our podcast off with a name segment. My name is Jeremy Harlings from the Prairie Center for Christian Education, or PCCE. And alongside me, from the Society of Christian Schools in British Columbia, or SCSBC, is a guy who went from hooking humpies to hooking golf balls, Darren Speaksma.
Hey, Run.
Hey, Darren.
Darren, do you want me, before I go to the prompt, do you want to elaborate on that intro? Do you know what I'm referencing? Because it's been a while since we did our last episode.
You wrote it, Jeremy. I think I know what it's referencing, but
well, what's a humpy, Darren? Let's maybe start with that.
Pink salmon.
That's right, and they have a big hump on their backs.
Yes, the males would have a big hump on their backs when they were coming upstream to spawn. Yes.
And you've moved away from that because too many people are fishing.
It's bonkers down here.
And you've started to golf instead. So yes. A little bit of context for that. Mm-hmm. Darren, can you tell us about a job you had outside of teaching?
Well, my most boring job that I can imagine, to the point where I would count how many cents I was making every 10 or 15 minutes, was watering trees. Before there was automatic watering, I would go with a hose and a watering wand, a minute and a half at each tree at a nursery, and I made my $4.25 an hour, and I would calculate how many quarters I was making per 15 minutes as a way to pass the time. The one positive is I can identify a staggering amount of fauna when I'm traveling because of how much time I had to read all the tags. Like, you're standing there, like, you might as well read the tags of all the trees, and you learned all kinds of things about the trees. But mind-numbingly boring job.
Apparently, boredom increases empathy. So really, you were just empathy building and just cashing in. Well, it doesn't sound like you were cashing in too big time.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
Did you ever hug the trees?
No tree hugging at that stage. I would have a tendency to hug trees now. We just had an incident on the road where the city came and ripped out a bunch of trees, even though they were perfectly healthy and fine. And my wife was glad I wasn't home because she was envisioning me running outside and sitting down beside the tree and not letting the city remove the tree from our front yard.
Well, the proper BC thing to do would be to chain yourself to it, I would assume, wouldn't it?
I think, based on the story of who was there, they would have just walked away. Like, unionized people would have looked at that. I would have just had to sit down. They would have been like, I'm out. I'm leaving.
Would have been successful.
From Advance, from Advance in Eastern Canada, we have a guy who's become a voice for the rights of frogs, Justin Cook.
Hey, Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Justin, frogs rights? You know that reference? It's been a while.
Francophonie?
You wouldn't let your son use live frog bait to catch fish. Uh-huh. You were okay with him using a bass to catch a muskie, but using a live frog to catch a fish was not okay.
How are frogs different than worms?
Well, I don't recall any of this, so you're asking the wrong guy, apparently.
Well, it was a different Justin Cook you had on last time. So, Justin, maybe we can get to know you here by telling us about a job you had outside of teaching.
Good segue. Well done. So, you know, when I was growing up, you hit high school. It was time for summer jobs, man. You had to work full time. I was a bit of a late bloomer, so I was about 80 pounds wet in grade 9, and I started a job landscaping and basically had panic attacks every day at work because the things I was trying to move or lift mm-hmm. were basically heavier than I was. Mm-hmm. So this one company I was with, great company, a quite colorful crew I was working with, all much older than I was. But we would often do the patio around a pool that had just been installed. So I was often moving wheelbarrows around the concrete apron of the pool to dump on the outside around where the patio was being installed. Well, I was trying to make this corner in the shallow end. And wouldn't you know it, that wheelbarrow full of gravel was just a little too heavy for little wimpy me. Lost it, got a speed wobble, boom, into the pool. The whole wheelbarrow. There was like a massive cloud of gray that just started spreading through the entire pristine new pool. I jumped in and started scooping gravel out of the pool. That's how I know I was 80 pounds wet.
What a sickening feeling.
Yes, that was like a slow motion train wreck right there as you were telling that story.
Well, it was basically a slow motion wheelbarrow wreck, to be honest with you.
I like the speed wobble. I know exactly what you're referencing when you say that, a speed wobble. So, as we heard off the top, we are honored to be welcomed virtually into Great Lakes Christian High School by Eli Banta. Hey, Eli.
Hey, Jeremy.
Eli, tell us about a job you had outside of teaching.
Well, along with Hook and Humpies, my second job ever was working with my my grandfather and my uncle and their commercial fishing crew in the North Channel of Lake Huron. So my mother's from Northern Canada. My father is from Texas. And so the summer I turned 16, I got shipped off up north to learn me to become a man, I guess. And we worked 6 days a week on the lake. And we were fishing out of Thessalon the year that, or the months that I was there. So I stayed with my grandma and grandpa in the basement that smelled of chopped wood and, you know, northern pine trees. My grandfather, who actually will turn 99 years old and just finished coming off the lake about 2 years ago. So he's been commercial fishing for 70 years on Lake Ontario. So I spent the summer there. Pulling whitefish out of nets and tying nets together as they got reset in the afternoon and trying to hit seagulls with with suckers for fun.
Eli, my ignorance around sometimes the size of the Great Lakes, would you deal with some pretty good swells? Like how's your seasickness is my question. And is that a thing in the lakes?
Yeah, I don't remember being seasick, but not in Lake Ontario. I do remember down in the Florida Keys fishing and being quite far offshore and getting pretty seasick. I think we were inside of, you know, it's a covered boat. And it's pretty stable compared to a lot of other boats I've been on. So I don't remember there being a lot of rocking back and forth.
Just a quick rating, 10 best job I ever had, 1 being worst job you ever had. Did you enjoy it? Tell me what you'd rank that job.
Oh yeah. So like in one sense it would be a 1 and in another sense it would be a 10, like all good endeavors, including teaching, there's things that were just so great. Oh, nice. And I remember a tremendous sense of satisfaction that I was doing real work, as we often talk about in our classrooms. You know, kids get engaged, when they do real work. And so I felt like, you know, here's a real job, right? Like this is what my grandfather's been doing his whole life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Said, Grandpa, like, I just want to be a commercial fisherman like you. He said, don't be dumb. Go back to school.
That
is awesome.
Yeah. What about you, Jared? Did you have a job?
Nope. Full-time teacher from the time I was born. No, I had some summer jobs like you guys. Probably one that stands out to me is one that was, I did some moving, furniture moving in my day. I drove 5 tons. So I had my air brakes license and could drive some semi-larger, you know, some trucks that are a bit bigger, and got this job in Edmonton. I just moved to Edmonton, and it was with a company. I won't say the name, but it has a couple small, I'll say Big Hearts, we'll say, is part of the business. And they were
not even subtle, just for the record, not even subtle.
Hey, there's a lot of Big Hearts out there.
Okay.
There's a lot of Big Hearts out there. I'm guessing that they're run, each one is run differently. I'll just name that. Okay. And this one was run absolutely bonkers to me. I every day came home to my wife and said, you will not believe what happened today. And so I'll just give you one example. I had to drive a truck out. I was probably 21. The guy I go with is probably about 40. We start driving out. I could only drive a maximum of 2000 RPMs or it overheat. And so we had an hour and a half drive that took probably 2.5 hours because we could only drive a certain speed. And as we're driving, this was before marijuana was legal in Alberta. He would start to roll up and smoke a joint, and I opened my window, cruising down the highway, getting quite cold, but he finishes, sleeps the rest of the way. On the way back, he rolls another one. I said, can we not do this, please? And so he says, fine, pull over. So we pull over. He does his thing. I eat my lunch. He gets back in. And just to give you a kind of a feel for the office, okay, he says, as we're driving back, please don't tell the other guys. And I'm assuming he's thinking he doesn't want me to talk about the fact that he's smoking marijuana. But no, he says, he follows up by saying, I don't want them to know that you made me pull over to smoke this and not to smoke it on the drive. He was embarrassed about his reputation that a 21-year-old asked him. So that just gives you a little glimpse into the office dynamics of this company. It was I then got a job like 2 weeks later at FedEx, and it was the exact opposite. Went from totally unprofessional to like a world of professionalism that I'd never seen. So for the second half of our opening square, we have our host choose from a variety of segments that all rhyme with aim. So it could be game, it could be flame. But today, Eli has chosen the segment. Eli, can you give us a drum roll? Frame.
Bam.
All right. So the frame segment, it refers to us highlighting a devotional practice or resource that's, you know, either personally or professionally that we're utilizing or recommend. Justin, we'll start off with you.
All right. Well, with my work in teaching for transformation, I have absolutely loved the way it has spurred me on to get even more committed to seeing God's story and living God's story. And one of the ways I've done that, this was recommended by a friend quite a while ago now, but I've been listening to the BEMA podcast, BEMA, B-E-M-A. It's hosted by a gentleman named Marty Solomon and Brent Billings. And really, it's just a walkthrough, a very quite meticulous walkthrough the Bible as God's story, starting in session one with Torah, moving all the way through the New Testament, and then even beyond. It starts moving into church history. It kind of continues on with God's story through history. So I'm in the middle of season four, right around the book of James. Been going strong and deeply, deeply in love with the way that Marty Solomon has helped me understand more dynamically the biblical story from a Jewish lens, from an Eastern perspective. So very contextualized with ancient Near Eastern worldview and Jewish geography, etc. It's been hugely helpful. Love it.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin. Eli, devotional practice resource.
Like Justin, I'm a huge podcast fan, but for this segment, I selected a new practice that we just started last year at our school, and it's just reciting the Lord's Prayer, which may seem a little bit old school, but we use a slightly different translation, which we hoped would get kids thinking about the words. And not just reciting it plainly, but we use it as a good reminder of why we're gathered together for learning. And it's also a good conversation starter later in the day to have a conversation with a student about collaboration or how they're treating each other. It's a good opportunity to be able to say, hey, this morning we recited this together, right? It came over the loudspeaker. And we said, Father, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sinned against us, right? And so it just springboards into conversations with students about behavior or goals. And I found it meaningful to recite something that Jesus himself said every school day for the last 2 years.
Very cool. Thanks, Eli. Darren. Devotional practice resource.
Yeah, so I'm going to pick walking. I think it's something that doesn't necessarily make the list when people think of what is worship, what is a devotional practice. And obviously it ties together with contemplation and quiet and that sort of stuff. But the embodiment of walking on my own in quiet has really done more for me in my walk with God in the last, since the pandemic, I would say, than probably anything else that I've been involved in.
Darren, do you have ways of trying to be intentionally contemplative I don't need to overly spiritualize it on you, but.
I have tried different things, but none has stuck over the long term. I think ultimately it's trusting that God meets me there. If and that's even on those days where I want to say my heart is open, but it probably isn't, and my mind is full of other things. There's something about the embodied experience of walking that sort of sorts that out physically for me that I can't explain. But invariably. And science would support this too. And I get a kick out of the fact that science catches up with sort of, exile and journey and some of the other things that fit very well in scripture and come through scripture. And then science comes along and says, hey, by the way, this is good for you. So I do love that part as well, but nothing that's really stuck, I would say. And part of that, is my own struggle with attention. And, sitting quietly, I don't want to say it doesn't work for me, but there is something about my physiology that makes the sitting quietly in contemplation, hands on your knees, just sort of breathing, far more challenging for me than the same sort of connection with God if I'm walking.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Darren.
Yeah. What about you, Jared?
So I'm not certain I haven't said this before, but I'm going to say it again, partly because it's actually a testament to, if I have before, that I've continued to do this, because I'm a person that often gets, I need to change things up quite regularly, but a year or so back, I think Ed Newt, shout out to Ed, recommended an app called Lectio 365. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those ones that if I'm doing something as a regular liturgy, then I can tend to speed it up to get it done. And I intentionally listen to the app on the audio version where I can't, mm-hmm. I can't just read it faster. And it so forces me to stay in the 10 minutes and stay in that time. There's a morning segment and an evening segment. I haven't been as regular in the evening segment, but the morning one I've been quite consistent with. And I am just becoming more and more appreciative of that practice. Our church right now, we're recording, it's Lent. And for Lent, we have engaged in Lectio as the sermon process. We read a service or a scripture a couple times. The pastor then basically sermons based on what's catching his attention in that. And then we reread the passage again a third time as a way of what are you committing to? And so anyway, that practice is something that I've really appreciated in my life. And that the app itself does a really nice job of slowing me down to do it in a way in which I don't just rush through. So listeners, we love recommendations. And these types of things teachers love hearing about. So if you have a devotional practice for your classroom or personally, share this with us, tweet us or X us. I don't know what that even means, but at Every Square Centimeter, message us on Instagram. But we're going to transition from our opening square to the part of our podcast where we learn a little bit about places in Canada and celebrate the people and practices in Christian education. Before we do, here's a word from our sponsor.
Hi everyone, my name is Lori and I'm the School Relationship Manager at Edudeo Ministries. As you look forward to a new school year, I want to encourage you to partner with us to give your students a more global perspective. You could invite me to speak to your students, participate in the Edudeo Go School Edition fundraiser, or support our annual campaign. You'll find more information about all of these by visiting www.edudeo.com/schools. Together, let's give more students in the majority world the opportunity for a Christ-centered education.
As we heard off the top, Great Lakes Christian High School is in Beamsville, Ontario, Canada. Justin, what did you find out about this mysterious place? Well, it just sounds intriguing, Beamsville. So I'm curious, what did you find out?
Well, I learned something new about Beamsville already, that there's a very stark contrast between the good people and the bad people in Beamsville. That is so helpful to know as a newcomer. Beamsville is quite close to where I live, so it's dear to my heart because I'm often driving through it or hanging out with friends in the area as a kind of a central meeting spot between St. Catharines and here in Hamilton. So Beamsville is situated on treaty land. These lands are steeped in the rich history of the First Nations, such as the Hedawendurunk, the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe, including the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. Intended to guide the relationship between First Nations and the Europeans, the two-row wampum is an important symbol of everlasting equality, peace, and friendship. Beamsville's a beautiful little town, fellas, nestled in the shadow of the Niagara Escarpment and on the shore of Lake Ontario on the Niagara Peninsula. It's named after a guy, Jacob Beam, a United Empire loyalist from the late 1700s. So you have to picture in this kind of pre-Canada history, there was all kinds of skirmishes and battles going on between the loyalists and Americans. Good old Jacob Beam. Beamsville is a major part of the Niagara wine region currently, and Great Lakes Christian School High School is located on King Street. Now, King Street's pretty cool because it goes on forever and ever. It's a two-lane kind of highway that stretches all the way to St. Catharines and then it turns into one of the major urban downtown arteries for Hamilton on the west. Now, that artery, that kind of forever road was an indigenous trail. As many of our kind of lengthy roads have been, they've been kind of inspired by or built on kind of major thoroughfares for indigenous going back centuries. So in that sense, to me, it's pretty cool that Great Lakes Christian High School's driveway is kind of right on this trail that has this incredible heritage and history. Now, one last fact, Beamsville should also be known for something near and dear to many Canadians. We can thank it for a particular contribution to our beloved game of hockey. Any guesses? Eli, do you know? Does anyone know? Anyone want to guess?
I'm going to go with Beamsville. I'm going to go with the goal light, the red light.
Ooh.
That beams when someone scores.
Nice. Like the red beam, not the sun beam, but the red beam.
Nope. Red beam. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, not quite.
Go ahead, Eli. I think maybe there's a, I kind of think there's a famous hockey player that came from Beamsville, but I can't remember who it is.
You're ringing a bell for me too. I'll see if I can pull the name out in a second if I go look it up. But it's actually in 1898, hockey players from Beamsville were the first to use a net.
Hmm. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Were they using a peach basket before? Basketball?
No, that's James Naismith, Canadian, but yeah, just down the road. Its invention is attributed to William Fairbrother. So we got Jacob Beam and William Fairbrother. And for those of us who know what it's like to chase down a puck on a large pond with only our boots as goalposts, we salute you, Mr. Fairbrother, and we salute you, Sunbeams and Beamsvillians alike, in the town of Beamsville. Eli, what do you love about Beamsville?
I definitely love that my school's there. So I love living really close to my school and living in community with the people around it. But I love that we have hiking trails and some elevation in the form of the Bruce Trail, which is also a bit of a forever road running all the way from Niagara Falls all the way up to Tobermory.
Totally.
So I enjoy the Bruce Trail quite a bit with my three boys, and also the proximity to Lake Ontario, which is just, it just offers, you know, if you want to get close to the water, and the water does something for me, like walking does for Darren, just makes me feel close to the Creator.
Mm.
You mentioned your school there, Eli. Tell us about your school.
Yeah, so Great Lakes actually started, the high school started as a feeder school for a Bible college. That was the whole point, was to have kids come and go to high school so that they could then move on and attend the Bible college. And it was on the same campus as the high school is now. The Bible college has since become its own organization that they've split. The Bible college still exists. Great Lakes Bible College is in Waterloo, and still offers classes and degrees in theology. The high school campus is also home to a preschool. So we have our big school and we have our little school. Hmm. And it's quite a busy preschool, very popular and always sold out with a waiting list. So there's, I don't know, something like 35 to 50 little ones hanging around on the side of the campus. The campus also, besides having the school, houses approximately 50 to 60 students every year. So about half of our student population will live on campus with us in a girls' dorm and a boys' dorm. And we also have faculty housing, small hot houses left over. The school actually owned quite a bit more property than they do today. They owned quite a large chunk from King Street, as Justin mentioned, almost all the way to the very next main road, which would have been John Street. And it was it's now situated amongst a bunch of other homes, but at one point in time, the school owned and then sold off as needed. So we have dorm students from all over the world, and we have dorm students from Nigeria, Uganda, Ghana, Ivory Coast, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Ukraine, and Colombia. We've had students from South Korea and Mexico as well. And our international students are not our only students. We have about half of our students coming to us from the local population, St. Catharines, Grimsby, Welland, and such. So we're small, tight-knit, but we're basically a global mission located right in the heart of Niagara. A lot of our students coming to us for a education which has Christian morals and Christian principles and good academics. But some of our students aren't necessarily Bible-believing Christians or even really know much about the Bible at all. So that makes it for a different kind of Christian school for sure.
If I walked into your classroom, what would I see?
Probably a lot of stuff. So my classroom is full full of things. I've got my main desks. I prefer large tables to desks so that we can collaborate together. So I inherited a classroom that had desks, and I quickly found somebody who had tables and bribed them to switch with me. So usually my students sit at least two, usually three or four to a desk as they're working together on group work or some kind of project. And I have large cabinets at the back of my room that hold everything from chicken wire to paper to white glue to leftover plastic tubing that a parent has donated to old towels that are intended to be made into sound panels for a podcast studio and student work all over the place. So it's a little bit half workshop makerspace and a little bit half lecture hall.
Eli, what did high school look like for you personally when you grew up?
So I grew up actually in Rochester, New York. So it was an American system. So it looks a little bit different than the Canadian high school that I teach in now. Instead of four periods per day, you know, four classes each semester, we were on a full year schedule. So I had nine periods, eight different classes with one of those periods off for lunch. So math all year round, English all year round. My dad is from Texas and my mom from Northern Canada. And when they got married, my dad got a job working for Eastman Kodak Company as an IT guy. And Eastman Kodak's headquarters are in Rochester, New York. And so the popular film company there that people might recognize from when cameras needed film. And high school was a time, I didn't grow up in a Christian household, and I was kind of subject to, you know, the fads of the time, trying to earn the approval of my peers, trying to figure out who I was and that sort of thing. Of course, that's not unfamiliar to any teenager, let alone Christian or non-Christian. But I definitely didn't have a strong sense of identity. And though I did good at school and I got good grades, I didn't consider myself to be academic. I spent a lot of time doodling or drawing or even sleeping in class. And I went to a big high school with, I think we had 349 in my grade. Yeah, I just basically did all I could do to keep my head down and just get by.
Eli, that's helpful just to give us a sense of who you are and kind of the setting of the story, your classroom. Curious what you have in mind to talk to us about or to invite us into today. What are you thinking for a topic?
Yeah, so I came upon physics sort of by accident. I always intended to do computer animation and then architecture, and ended up deciding after becoming a Christian that I really wanted to help students thrive through high school and not just survive like I felt like I had. So my first intuition was to take them into the woods and get them close to death, and that would scare them into believing in God. And so I looked into some programs in Alaska where I could take kids you know, into these expeditions, and I looked into programs in Vermont. But these universities wanted a lot of money per year, and always a fairly good problem solver, I realized that the careers that I was going to get with these wouldn't pay for my school bills. And so I had to figure out a way I could do both these outdoor expeditions with teenagers and let them, you know, get, see the brevity of life or just see the wonder of creation in order to sort of wake up their senses to the reality of God and a purpose. And so I thought to myself, well, there's a hiking club at school. Maybe I could just become a school teacher and do my outdoor stuff through a school. Let's just do that. So I never intended on being a teacher ever, not in a million years. Even in university, I had to apologize to my teachers for, you know, I wasn't a good student in terms of my behavior. I was always quick to come up with an answer or a joke, and because I was fairly good at academics naturally, and had a really good memory that would get me by on a lot of things. I got a lot of away with a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have, and was able to apologize to a lot of teachers for things like that. So, you know, I thought surely I can help some students avoid sort of the attitude I had towards my education. So I decided, well, I had to be a teacher. I got to pick a subject. So I chose between, I narrowed it down, I should say, to the subjects of teaching Spanish. I was going to be a Spanish language teacher because that's what I took when I was going to school in the States. It was the way sort of the main language that you would learn there, as opposed to French here in terms of second language. And I always liked my physics teacher, Mrs. Green, because she just let me sleep. And I had her third period, and it was the perfect time to take a nap. And I appreciate, I mean, I don't know, I don't let my students sleep now, but for some reason, I still appreciate the fact that she didn't give me a hard time. She just, she just kind of taught the class, and she didn't give me a ton of individual attention, positive or negative. But I was like, you know, physics is hard, and I haven't really challenged myself, so let's give it a go. So I signed up for physics, and I at a local university. I hadn't just a state University of New York, and I hadn't visited the school or done the normal things that you would do. This was actually, now I was going into my third school. I had already been to a community college and been to the University at Buffalo for some time. So this is now my third school. And I got an email from the head of the physics department, who called me into his office, and didn't even know where the department was. So I wandered my way through campus with my map. I finally found Doc Mancuso, just Doc as we used to call him. And he goes, "You're a physics major." And I go, yeah. He goes, "No, like physics major." It's like, "When did you show up?" I'm like, "Today. Today's my first day on campus." He's like, "You didn't come visit before? Like, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm going to be a missionary." And such started a good relationship with Doc. It was a very small department. There's only three physics professors. I got to do research with superconductive materials my second year of university, because it was small. We set things on fire, did things we shouldn't have done in the basement at the physics lab, and had a great time. And I just fell in love with physics and really with the idea that you can see some amazing aspects of our Creator in ways that you can't see in other ways. So after my physics degree, I just decided, hey, there's maybe something to this teaching thing. And so I kind of jumped into it with both feet, kind of forgot, so to speak, about the outdoor ed aspect of it. I was able to use it early on. I taught at a military school for a few years, and then was able to do some rock climbing and some outdoor stuff with the kids at the military school. And of course, these kids are from a rough background, so I was happy to be able to sort of bring some joy and some light into their and into their rough lives. They had been sent there. They did not want to be there.
I think as I'm listening to you, I'm imagining myself as a physics student with a propensity for also either sitting in the back, absolutely not aware of what was going on, or trying to catch a few Z's myself. Talk to me about your classroom and how you're going to take Darren Speaksma sitting in the back, who is just trying to endure, into a place where I get to see God. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so in my classroom, my grade 11 and 12 physics classes, I run an inquiry-based class that's based off of physics education research out of Rutgers University, Harvard University, the University of Minnesota, which basically puts students in small groups and actively engaged in discussing, predicting, and testing their ideas around physics. So the traditional lecture, it doesn't look like me at the whiteboard waxing eloquent about quantum entanglement or long derivations. It looks like three students sitting on opposite sides of a table with some paper and some pencil, maybe a couple masses, maybe a cart. A physics cart, maybe just a meter stick, and they're eagerly discussing and reading the questions and trying to come up with their best formulation of their ideas. And then it would look like me walking from group to group and engaging in some Socratic dialogue, asking them questions about what they think and why they think it, before going back to the front, calling everybody's attention, consolidating some information, and pointing out some highlights about, you know, where can we see God in these things. So we could be talking about electromagnetic energy. We could be asking the question in this, you know, in this intermediate time where we do some whole class stuff. We could say, you know, how long has this energy been around? Energy is transformed. It's never destroyed. It's never created. How long has it been around? Forever? If so, is energy God? Did God create energy? How does that all work? And get into some dialogue that way before I very quickly don't necessarily answer any of their questions, but immediately send them back to discuss amongst themselves. Mm.
Eli, when you mention groups, there's countless educators out there who think, oh, great, some kid's doing all the work, two other kids are coasting. Why are you absolutely on fire for group work when other teachers are so nervous about using it as a pedagogy?
Yeah, so in terms of the group work, the evaluation actually comes not so much through a single product that the group hands in as one, but it comes out of, you know, we often talk about that triangulation, observing what the students are doing, having conversations with them, and then taking in their product and looking at each of their products together. So each student does their own work, but they're supported there with two other people that can help them or that they can help. And so the research suggests that it's actually a really good method, with some caveats. So the criteria should be that the students each have an individual role to fill. So one student should be a manager who's keeping track of the time and keeping the group on task. Another student should be a speaker. So when I ask that group to answer a question, the speaker has to answer. Not the smartest kid, not the kid who wrote the best answer, the speaker. So the speaker has to make sure that they understand what the answer is. But they're not the one that I'm going to necessarily take their paper from. I'm going to take that paper from the recorder. So now all three of them have to make sure that they've communicated with each other about what their answer is for any given question, because any one of them could need to account for that answer in a different way, either written or spoken.
Yeah, beautiful. I I get excited about that. And I am still brought back to my physics 11 class and the young lady in there, and had someone taught me about quantum entanglement, come on, that's that might have got my attention as far as that goes. But I can imagine. Sorry, go ahead, Jer.
Well, I just wanted to hear you wax eloquently about quantum entanglement, Darren. I just give me your 10-second soundbite on quantum entanglement.
As a 16-year-old, quantum entanglement would have nothing to do with physics. That's all I was referring to. But
it would be very physical, but not physics.
Very entangled, just yes. Not very quantum. Oh,
yes. Yeah. But it does make me think of the little bit of reading I've done of Ilya Delio and just the connection between quantum physics and our understanding of who God is and the power that God has placed in creation and just that latent potential that God's created in creation. And I just, as I listen to you, Eli, I get excited about the opportunity your students are having to not only master being a scientist and working collaboratively, because that's where real science happens, but also then developing mastery over some of these concepts in a faithful way. So thank you very much for that. Is there anything we didn't talk about or ask you about that you're like, oh, I wanted to share about this?
Yeah, one great thing that I've learned over the last 11 years, and a lot of this I developed one over, you know, in our Christian schools, we have a freedom, I think, that sometimes we take for granted. But coming from, you know, having taught in other systems, just the support that good Christian administrators give to their teachers to be able to take risks and allow them to possibly fail and to be okay with that is just incredible. So kudos to those great Christian administrators out there who recognize that. One of my favorite quotes is, "Behold the turtle. He doesn't make any progress unless he sticks out his neck." And so the administrators that allow us to stick out our neck and you know that maybe they're going to get some flack from parents, like, what kind of teachers do you have doing this? Mm-hmm. So one thing that I've been able to incorporate is something called CGPS. So in terms of the group work that you mentioned, Justin, and like, you know, how are you going to grade my kid based on another kid's performance? CGPS stands for Cooperative Group Problem Solving. And essentially you give the students a physics problem, but a real life physics problem that will take the whole period to solve, that will require more than one person to be actively engaged on the task in a different way during the whole time. Otherwise, they will not be successful. At the end of the period, they get a single opportunity to test to see if they're right. And so a good example of this would be in projectiles. So I give the students a ramp that they can clamp to the end of their desk and a marble. And they get to roll the marble off the ramp and see where it lands on the floor. And with some measurements, they're able to figure out how fast the marble is leaving the table. Well, once they've done that, I give them basically a cup that's on a chemistry retort stand. Imagine the Bunsen burner, you know, and the little clamp that's holding the beaker. So I give them a retort stand with a small ring on it, probably about the size of those little Dixie cups that when you're done with the dentist, they let you rinse your mouth out with. Mm-hmm. And I have one of those little cups taped to the stand somewhere above the floor. It could be 20 centimeters, 30 centimeters, 40 centimeters, and every group gets a different height. Well, they hand me their marble and I give them what's called the target. And their job is to place this target on the floor using mathematics to calculate how far it should be so that the marble will exactly land in the cup. Mm-hmm. At which point, once they have their cup placed and they're ready to test, there's a different level of learning. There's a different level of emotion. At this point, they're not thinking about grades. They're not thinking about anything else other than, are me and my team going to be successful? are we going to be able to, you know, will it work? Will the marble go in the cup? And usually, I mean, the teachers now are used to it, but usually I'll get a passerby, usually a grade 9 who hasn't heard screaming coming from my classroom to poke it and be like, what is going on? And it'll hit the edge and we'll all go, whoa, or something like that. And, just the joy and the emotion and the excitement of learning is, really evident in those. And, you know, in a lot of cases, we say, you know, don't put kids under high stakes pressure. Don't put kids under time limits, and things like this. But if we can do it in a fun way where they know they're supported, and there's a real learning goal, there, that's some of the best learning that has always take place. And not only just the best learning, just the most fun learning. I get excited thinking about these activities. So
The fact that it's groups made of students from all over the world makes it even better. Eli, the picture in my head from the story you just shared is awesome. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Eli, for sharing your journey, telling us a little bit about your classroom. We're going to transition to something we call our celebration of learners. On the EverSquare Centimeters website, we have an ever-growing gallery that we call our Celebration of Learners. It's populated with wonderful people that have joined us on our podcast, shared a bit of their journey, and then, as we're about to do, have been forced to listen to us read off nice things about themselves, usually from someone they work with. And today, Eli's letter is written by the principal of Great Lakes Christian High, Carrie Kennedy.
All right, from Carrie. I know that Eli will be absolutely mortified that I am singing his praises, but this is an excellent time to share just some of the ways that Eli blesses our school. He is an innovative educator who loves problem-based learning and teaching critical thinking. Eli is an active teacher, whether he's helping students with a potato cannon or helping students build roller coasters to enter into the Wonderland competition, or working with design and implementation, or partnering with Edudeo, or learning Japanese from our visiting exchange students, or investing in a new podcast space. Eli is focused on making learning tangible and real for his students and for himself. Eli is an excellent coach. He has nurtured our boys' volleyball team and grown them into stronger players and a better team. He diligently coaches our track athletes and trains right along with them. One of Eli's greatest strengths is his passionate love for Jesus, and he shares the good news of Jesus with everyone. Everything he does is for God's glory and God's kingdom. I pray that God continues to use Eli, that when Eli's life on earth is done, he can join with Paul and say, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith.
Yeah, Carrie is just an amazing support to everyone. So I can't say enough good about her and thank her for those super kind words. If I've done anything to help my students, it's because she's modeled it. When we didn't have a place to live between selling our other house and buying our new one, she let us live in her basement for 2 months. So that's the kind of, that's the kind of person she is. So if I've been able to do, anything at school that way, I think I've learned it from her. So I appreciate those words very much.
Eli, if anyone wants to connect with you, how could they do that?
The easiest way to reach me is probably just email, really easy, eli.banta@gmail.com. Yeah, I'm happy to share anything that I might have in terms of wisdom.
Listeners, we would love your involvement in our podcast as well as we head into season 4. You know that if you're a listener, we'd like to do some campfire episodes and we love to interact with fan interactions or questions. And so it becomes just the stick that I say, hey, email us at everysquarecentimeter@gmail.com. But we mean it. Like, we would love to have some questions, some prompts. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to hear you tell us about an educator that we should celebrate or a fun teacher antidote. And you know what? I'm still looking for people to review and subscribe and rate. And the rating, we are still hanging on 9 ratings. And it's a big deal to get to 10. Come on. Who's going to be the number 10 person to give a rating on Apple Podcast? It could be you. What a distinction. I also want to shout out something else. We live under the banner of Christian Schools Canada. Our celebration of learners is on the Christian Schools Canada website. And just recently, Christian Schools Canada has made the courageous decision to hire an executive director. And we think it'd be cool if that person was a listener of the Every Square Centenary mm-hmm. podcast. So if you are a listener, that I think bumps you up as a potential hire in this position. I think it should bump you up a little bit. If you are interested, know that the application deadline is coming March 29th, and you can see more details on the Christian Schools Canada website.
Jeremy.
Before we go, Justin.
I assume most of the interview questions will be based on actual content from the podcast. What else would they ask in an interview?
I would expect that would be the case. Yeah. So we probably wouldn't do well because we often don't recall some of our own facts. But if you're out there, that would be wonderful. Before Darren sends us off with a blessing, Eli, I want to thank you for hosting our run and ask the group if anyone knows what group of animals form a run. Eli, do you have something in mind? Do you want to take a shot at this first?
This could probably be a lot of different things. However, on the Great Lakes campus, we often have a run of preschoolers. The preschoolers are running. The supervisors are running after them. Their noses are running. There's all kinds of running going on. So I think it's a run of preschoolers.
Whatever answer mine is, it's going to be far worse than that. So I wish that was the answer that I'd gone with. Anyone else want to take a guess at the group of animals? Justin? Well,
I think it's a little known fact that we have salmon here in Ontario. And so I'm going with the salmon of the day. I'm going humpies.
I love that. I did intentionally leave Darren to the last because I didn't even want to give him the chance. I'm glad, Justin, you hit this. There's a run of salmon. You could also call them a school or a leap or a shoal, which I haven't heard those before. I've heard of school and run. Salmon will swim hundreds of miles to the ocean, swim thousands of miles in the ocean to get to their feeding grounds. Then they will swim all the way back to the place where they were born, and they will then spawn and die. One of the most amazing journeys. 5 to 10% of them make it back. Okay, so a pretty small amount. I always find salmon, the idea of salmon, quite inspiring. And so my prompt for the group is, what animal do you find inspiring? Darren, let's go to you.
The Canada goose.
Ooh.
Because
tell me more.
Not only I'm told they mate for life, so that's a good example for all of us. But more importantly, like, they are everywhere. It's prolific. Like, they are just, it doesn't matter where you go, there they are. And they stand up for themselves. For the most part, they're passive. They take the path of least resistance. But when it's important, they will stand up for themselves and for their loved ones if animals love each other. I'm not sure what the philosophy and ethics on that are, but they do protect each other, and there's something about that. So I'm going with Canada goose. A very unpopular choice, I realize, but I'm going with it anyway.
I used to have a little motivational poster about Canada geese and all the kind of metaphors of life lessons. And so I was going to go with that as well, Darren. I have some facts here I'll just name in light of yours.
Okay.
So for example, geese depend on each other's skills. And so what they will do is when the lead goose tires, it moves back into formation and another goose flies to the front and takes its place, right? Mm-hmm. They will honk to encourage those at the front to keep up their speed. Okay, positive reinforcement. And this is interesting. When a goose is sick or wounded, two geese will drop out of formation and follow it to the ground to offer help and protection until it can fly again. They then add their numbers to another formation to catch up with the flock. So I just find that pretty fascinating as well. And bold. They poop wherever they feel like it. Wherever they feel like it. So just courageous, bold animals. Justin or Eli, other inspiring animals. Justin, let's go with you.
Well, I'm a huge, I don't know if I can top the goose. I love elephants. Very unique. So rather than an alpha male leading the herd, it's the oldest female, the matriarch. I think that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. They sing funeral dirges mm-hmm. at the death of their loved ones. I could go on and on. I'm a huge fan of elephants, the way they communicate over distance, the way they stay together, all kinds of things.
I think you said two things about elephants and I've learned two new things about elephants. So, very interesting. Eli, we've already got far more educational than we usually do in this section. So don't feel like you need to know, as much about your animal, but I'm curious what animal inspires you.
Yeah. Very cool. I like both the geese and the elephant. There's good things. Also, elephants are the only land mammals that can't jump. So very down to earth creatures.
Yes, totally. Nice.
I was inspired on a previous Every Square Centimeter podcast about turtle boils, and that has gotten me thinking about turtles a lot. And of course, I've already made a turtle quote, so I'll stick with turtles. And my inspiring animal will be a turtle on a fence post. So when you see a turtle on a fence post, you know what that means, right?
Tell us.
I have.
He didn't get there by himself. And so we have to stay humble and realize we're all turtles. We're all turtles on fence posts. Wherever we are, we didn't get there by ourselves. So to end off our collaboration theme, I think that's it. We couldn't do it on our own.
That is brought full circle. Well done, Eli. Good luck, Darren, trying to, top that. That felt like a send off already, but Darren, please, bless us.
Yeah. And today I wanted to close this off with a prayer that I've just spent quite a bit of time with, through the season we're in now. So I'm going to finish us off with a prayer today. God of every beautiful thing, make us people of wonder. Show us how to hold on to nuance and vision when our souls become addicted to pain and to the unlovely. It is far easier to see the gloom and decay. So often it sings a louder song. Attune our hearts to the good still stirring in our midst, not that we would give ourselves to toxic positivity or neglect the pain of the world, but that we would be people capable of existing in the tension. Grant us habits of sacred pause. Let us marvel not just at the grand or majestic, but beauty's name etched into every ordinary moment. Let the mundane swell with a mystery that makes us breathe deeper still, and by this, may we be sustained and kept from despair. Amen.
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 So, Jer, I don't know. That's not my own prayer, but it's one I copy and pasted at some point I saw online. Not sure whose it is, but it's just one that's resonated with me over the past weeks.
Awesome. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, everyone. And stay encouraged, educators.
I want to thank Christian Schools Canada for sponsoring the podcast. Please know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of CSC, the schools of our guest, or any of our three regional organizations. Thanks for listening.